When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Caught Offside with Andrew Gunling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside from just outside of New York City and from Ireland, Europe. Andrew Gunling and JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
From Ennis, County Clare, to be exact. And from 3 a.m. in the morning.
Yep. Look at you.
Look at me.
Look at him. If JJ is speaking in hushed tones during this podcast, you'll have to forgive him. It's 3 a.m. where he is, so he's a warrior for doing this, and he's in a house with other people.
Yeah, I'm in my sister's place, and let's just say we have a good relationship, but waking her would be bad.
Right. You want to keep it good.
Yeah. And you know what, Andrew? Maybe some people find me speaking in these low, hushed tones kind of erotic. That's got to be the hope.
No, they don't. I've heard. I've heard from the people. They're repulsed by it. It's the anti-aphrodisiac for most people. How was your Christmas, JJ? Was it nice?
The Christmas season is ongoing. It's been fabulous. So I drove my parents down to my aforementioned sisters and brother-in-laws in County Clare. So this is like a honey trap. Basically a Yank trap. This is your Yank tourist trap. They've got the Cliffs of Moher, which, I mean, Americans just love it. They've got the Burn, which is the karst limestone.
Don't make us sound like we're a bunch of rubes.
No, but
enjoying the cliffs. They're beautiful. They're incredible.
Right, but I mean, you ask any American, what did you love, where do you want to go in Ireland? And they will say County Clare, Cliffs of Moher, and I don't blame them. We were out in Lahinch today, Andrew, and we walked along the beach. A bracing walk, I would say. Beautiful views. Then rain, because you must have that. The rain has been, I mean, they're trolling me now with the raining. It's too much. And then we grabbed two of the creamiest pints of Guinness. And then we watched Boxing Day or St. Stephen's Day football, which I must say, I know it's not ideal, the deal with NBC. I get that. We've gone through it. You know, you got to go to Peacock. You got to go here. You got to go there. Mm-hmm. You don't have to go to as many places as they do here. It's definitely more broken up here now than it ever was before. So Amazon are showing a few games. Premier Sports in Ireland, BT Sports in England have a game, and then Sky. Now, Sky have most of the games going forward, but if it's not your team, it's still split up a little bit. So it's kind of tricky. And, of course, the blackouts. I didn't see any 3 p.m. games. So I saw one full match today, and the rest was on the iconic Match of the Day highlights program. So, guys, if I'm missing anything, please – at CO Soccer Pod on Twitter, Caught Offside Pod on ESPN, and help me fill in the gaps, because it's just different here without the NBC package.
Yeah, NBC. It's interesting. Like, I think 10 years from now, it'll be viewed differently than the way it is now. The problem with NBC is that they spoiled us. Like, so we got used to having all of it for free. And then with Peacock, you know, it changed things. But the bottom line is everything, if you want it to be, every single thing is available to you fairly easily. We just got spoiled by the, you know, the first several years of their coverage. But yeah, they're excellent. They do a great job. A couple things for me that I thought you would find funny, and then we'll get into some of the Boxing Day stuff. For one, for Hanukkah, I wonder what you make of the subtle message that was being sent my way. So my parents got Luke, you know, like the Hess toy truck. Like that's like an annual tradition. Like Hess puts out their truck each year. So they got it for Luke one night for Hanukkah, and you know, so he opened it, played with it, like as children do. And my mom said to me, she's like, "Oh, did you throw the box away?" I said, "Well, yeah, we don't need it anymore." She said, "Oh, well, these are collector's items, so I thought maybe you should save the box so it would be worth something." And I was thinking, "Oh, yeah, oh well." But like in my head, I'm like, if we're getting to a place where I need to start pawning off my son's toys, like, bigger problems have come about, than throwing away the damn box of the Hess toy truck. And then the other thing.
Sorry, but parents do get to a point in their lives, and maybe we'll get there too, where those kind of thoughts straight away come into their mind, like down the line, that might have resale value.
Yeah, well, I did say to her, I said, "Don't worry about it. I don't think we're going to be trading the Hess toy truck in for money, all right? Like, it's okay. We'll throw the box away." And then the other thing, I don't know that I told you this, but, you know, we have a nice TV that was like my big gift to myself when we moved into our new house. And within the first 6 months, it broke, but it was still under warranty, so I got another one to replace it from Samsung. I'm going to keep saying their name. And then that one, the replacement one, also just broke. So this is twice in the first 3 years, this product, big black streaks down the front of the TV. Both times, same problem. This time out of warranty, talked to the people on the phone for an hour. They basically, finally, I got them to a place to just tell me, yeah, it's worth it for you to just buy a new TV than having it repaired. That would cost more money. It's infuriating. So anyway, the part that I thought you would find funny, I had no choice. I had to go out and get a new television. And so in my old TV's final act of vengeance, JJ, it's about, I think I saw online, it's like 70 pounds roughly, but I was like, I can move this. Like, it's all right. I don't need help.
Oh,
so
no.
We're just taking it into the basement to kind of store it until we're going to just get rid of it. And I'm going down the stairs and I slipped and I fell down the last stair and the TV landed on me. And so it scared the hell out of me. And Amanda heard it. She heard the commotion. And so there's me from the bottom of the stairs with the TV on me, on my back. And she said, "What happened? What happened?" And I'm just shouting up to her, "I fell! I fell!"
Oh my God.
The most pathetic sight. Now, I was ultimately okay, although I did hurt my leg, but I'm fine.
Oh God! Did she take a picture?
No, it wasn't the moment for that.
Oh my!
It felt serious in the moment.
Oh, you flailing with your arms underneath the TV. See,
like a crab that had been turned upside down,
like a beetle. Oh God!
I fell.
Oh, and look, people on the podcast have our hardcore listeners have long known that I have a fantasy about you, a recurring thought. That just gives me laughter. It's of you just falling over.
This is why I told
you. And using a life alarm to contact. I've fallen and I can't get up. Oh, God. Oh, I won't be able to continue. I'm going to get sick from laughing.
This is why I told you. I knew you, of anyone, would appreciate it. JJ, Boxing Day, the Premier League has returned. He's still laughing. Stop.
These legs just, oh, Amanda, I had an accident. All right, I'll stop. Oh, yeah. God. Now I'm imagining your face as you fall.
The horror in my eyes. I thought I was going to die. People die like that.
Yeah, but imagine me. Imagine the rabbi calling me up, because I get called up, surely. to give a speech.
You got a chance.
Oh, sure. I'm up there. I'm top five. Gotta be. and then me, your parents, and your sister in complete anguish, and I just burst out laughing.
Yeah. You'd be escorted right out of there. You can't have that.
Andrew made the move to television, and he died under a television. It's what he would have wanted. Okay, gotta stop. I'll stop.
All right. The Premier League returned, JJ. Obviously, we have been in such a World Cup mind frame for the last 6 to 8 weeks. Did it feel weird? Or did you feel like you seamlessly just kind of like rolled right back into it, like the World Cup was just a dream?
It felt so weird. And, you know, out with my brother-in-law, Owen, and he turns around to me at halftime in the Liverpool game, just as halftime's approaching, he goes, plus 3 minutes. What is this?
Yeah.
You know, the old familiar rhythms came back in, you know, watching certain players, you know, Aston Villa's ground. There's Villa Park. They play soccer there. Getting abused and called a knob by someone on Twitter of an opposition, you know, that kind of stuff. Lovely, lovely. The nature is healing.
Yes. Yeah, it really is. Yeah, it was a little bit weird. I don't know why, but it just felt weird. Like watching Liverpool, I was like, oh yeah, Mo Salah. Like, that's right. He's also a great player. Like all these guys who weren't a part of the World Cup, just like, it's amazing how quickly they just like disappeared from my mind. Like they're not even an entity. Like Erling Haaland, right.
James
right,
Ward.
He's one of the best players in the world.
James Ward-Prowse. Who is the manager of Southampton? Lopetegui at Wolves. What is going on? Oh, yeah. De Zerbi. He's the manager of Brighton. And Zito, who I think he's going to be a guy who features regularly in Twitter segments on this podcast because I think we both really like him. Zito Madu tweeted, going from that World Cup back to Premier League so quick is destabilizing. Feels like spending a month of fun with the love of your life and then waking up to your regular family. Now I have to remember the names of these kids again.
It was weird. I mean, I'm not saying it's bad. It's in some ways like, you know, it's kind of cool. Like you're still riding this wave of enthusiasm from a World Cup. And normally there'd be kind of a month of just like, well, now what? This is one where the World Cup ends and we're right back into this, which is great. But I don't know. I just weird is the only word I can use to describe it.
Sky Sports needed it so badly. Let me tell you guys, cricket ain't cutting it. Every other sport that they pretend isn't propping them up. You know, the Premier League is just their absolute tent pole. It keeps everything.
Oh.
And so you could see them kind of repeating things so much and like scraping for news. They needed the content. They needed this. And it's back now. And I'm pleased for them. I'm pleased for all of them.
And all of us as well. Because while it might feel weird at first, I find that we're going to seamlessly flow right back into this thing. And for all the people who are kind of new to this podcast, who may be kind of hooked onto us during the U.S.'s run in the World Cup or Argentina or whoever, if you've decided to stay with us, first off, thank you. You will not regret it. And second of all, I think you'll come to find that we devote as much or more heart and energy and attention to this league than we do anything else. So I hope you'll enjoy it, and I hope you'll find that to be a fun side of this podcast. So we'll go through now some of the marquee games, JJ, but like as we do, yeah, of course, a little bit of it will be breakdown of these games because there were a lot of really fun games, really entertaining games already right back into it today. But some of it too, I might kind of like think about, okay, we've had this little break in the season, the outlook on some of these teams as we kind of roll into, I would say the second half, but it's really not. They've only played 14, 15, 16 games. So there's still more than half of the season still to come. But this just felt like kind of like a halfway point, taking a deep breath sort of thing. Where do you want to start, JJ? You want to start at the Emirates with Arsenal?
Listen, we know how the Arsenal fans are, and we know that they are, as much as we love them, a sensitive bunch. If we didn't start at the Emirates, I think we'd be in trouble.
That makes sense. Top of the table, top of the podcast. I think that's a fair way to look at it, JJ. They go down a goal to West Ham, but then they storm back with three unanswered, and they win at 3-1, and they begin the second portion of the season, much like the way they ended the first, and that is winning, and lots of winning going on there in the red section of North London, JJ. They are They are doing things. So what is it now? It's 13 wins from 15 matches, if I have it right. I believe going into this break, they had won 12 of their first 14 games. And I think the statistic is anyone who has ever done that has gone on to win the league.
Correct.
Now, there's still this, I'll speak for myself. Look, I have fully jumped on board with the reality that they could go on and do this thing. I think that is distinctly possible. But there's still going to be part of me that's going to have to see them do it to believe it, just because we're in this era of Manchester City and Liverpool where we just, inherently my brain just goes to those teams when I think about, okay, well, who are my true title contenders? They've just proven it in a way that other teams have not. But Arsenal are starting to reach certain benchmarks. You know, the statistic that I just threw out there, teams top of the table at Christmas, things like that. They're starting to reach some of these benchmarks where they're forcing you to believe that this is truly possible. And they started once again here on Boxing Day, hammering that thought home into people's minds once more.
Yeah, and you know, there is a lot of people, not a lot of them Arsenal fans, waiting for this thing to fall apart. So being back in Ireland is good because you get to go to the bar and you get to talk to Premier League supporters of all various colours and creeds. And I was talking to a few Arsenal fans who would be in their mid-40s. So they saw the Invincibles. They saw the good times. They remember the 90s as well with George Graham. And they were so freaked out talking to them yesterday about, on Christmas Eve about Gabriel Jesus. Mm-hmm. And so it's really reassuring that you can have those three players, Nketiah, Saka and Martinelli, score those goals. It's really reassuring to be 1-0 down at half time and go on and win the game. These are the things that Arsenal, we don't associate with the late Wenger period and the early Arteta period. So this is really good. And Odegaard today was brilliant, Andrew. They generally looked miles better than West Ham. David Moyes said West Ham weren't at it, and they weren't apart from the goal, and it was a penalty. Saliba catching Jared Bowen. But there's something reassuring about Arsenal. That it's not going to reassure Arsenal fans. It just won't. They'll be nervous, and I totally understand that. But Arsenal looked like the real deal. And I don't think they'll win it, and it won't be because they're not good. It's because of Manchester City.
I think that there's still a lot of people out there who feel that way. Now they are giving themselves a little bit of a cushion. Like, that's the thing, is, you know, they've developed a little bit of room for error. Having said that, there's still so much of the season to play that it's hard to start looking at that and think, you know, Man City could make up a point differential in the blink of an eye. We've seen that happen before. So, we're going to have to get a little bit deeper into the season for me to start looking at cushions and starting to take that kind of thing seriously. It's interesting, though, JJ, with Arsenal. I think about teams in this league that win titles, and I think of really in any sport. And one of the things I think about with those teams are, okay, who are the statue guys? Like, and by that I mean, when a team wins a championship, oftentimes there's someone who gets immortalized out in front of that stadium in statue form. You know, with Man City, there's any number of guys that you could point to who would occupy that. De Bruyne, we could go through it. With your Liverpool side, Mo Salah is certainly that guy. This Arsenal team, like, I don't know. I guess maybe Bukayo Saka.
Yeah.
I guess he would be it, but it doesn't feel like there's a clear guy. And maybe that's one of the good things about them, is that there's just general depth across that team. But that's just one of the things that I've found interesting. Maybe Arsenal fans will correct me and say, it's absolutely Saka. What are you talking about? It's not even a question. But right now, I don't know that there's necessarily one guy who jumps out to me as the guy who, you know, would sort of occupy that role.
I know. And it's because we're probably at the start of something for Arsenal, or what Arsenal fans hope to be the start. It's 3 years to the day since Mikel Arteta took over. And it was interesting to listen to David Moyes speak in the pregame and talk about, you know, how he felt he saw this coming. He saw the development of Martinelli. He saw the development of Eddie Nketiah, who scored a brilliant goal tonight. Such a sharp turn and a great finish. and he saw them coming down the line, and he basically said, when was the best time to play Arsenal? 3 years ago, because he really thinks Arteta's been building this. So we're talking about statue guys. It's too early. It's really too early.
Maybe he's it.
Arteta.
Maybe he's the statue.
It's so, you know what? There's a lot of people, including Arsenal fans, will turn off right now because we're talking about statues and stuff. Like this is...
Oh, come on, this is fun.
No, but I know what you mean. But I think what you've done will enrage people. Can we find a better word than statue guy? Marquee guy.
Statue.
Statue. You can't talk about statues. You can't.
I think the thing with Arteta that I think... Look, I have said... putting my Tottenham sensibilities aside, I was able to kind of, I think, without bias and objectively watch All or Nothing Arsenal. And I have said repeatedly that, like, watching him in that show, yes, there were certain little bits and things that he did that were swings and misses. But I watched that show and thought, I'd play for that guy. I would play hard for that guy.
Oh, you love that
guy. And so I do think that show, like, you know, we can sometimes say, I don't know that they give us the exact type of access we want. It's not as raw as we want. But you get a sense of what's going on behind closed doors. You may not get 100% sense, but you get a sense of what's going on. And I think watching that show, it gave us a glimpse that there was a real positive energy going on behind those walls.
Do you feel...
So maybe I'm a little bit surprised that it's materialized this quickly. Like, I thought maybe they could take, like, they didn't qualify for Champions League last year. I thought maybe it could be okay. The next step would be they finish third. You know, they get a Champions League place comfortably. In the end, that is maybe what will happen. But I did not think that we'd be at this point where we're talking about them as true contenders to Manchester City's crown.
No, they've been very good and they continue to be good. And they continue to find goals from beyond the guy that initially had that flurry of goals at the start of the season, and we thought Jesus would be the man, and we thought, can they survive without him? Well, that was a good start, at least, to the second part of the season.
Yeah, and you know, last bit on them and him, specifically Gabriel Jesus, I wonder if it helps them a little bit. Look, he's out now. That's a blow, certainly. At some point, goals might dry up. They might have a hard time scoring. They might have to rely on defending a little bit more. But remember, for however great his start was for Arsenal, it had been a while since he had scored a goal for them.
Sure.
I mean, so I wonder, but they continued to win. So I wonder if maybe that dry spell and now him being out of the lineup for the next couple months, if maybe they can sort of take some confidence from what they were able to do prior to the World Cup break when they were winning games without him scoring goals and think, okay, well, you know, we know we're still good. You know, we may not have this guy who was our great signing during the last summer's transfer window, but we know we can still win if he's not here, if he's not playing at his best. We're more than just him. So, you know, maybe that's a little bit of what we're seeing.
I think so. And I mean, I wouldn't underestimate the things he did outside of scoring goals, which was important to the team too. But again, like I said, the reassurance of being able to get goals when he's not there is pretty good. So I would have a word for West Ham, though. They kind of got bullied in this game. They were not very good.
No, they did lead at the half.
Yeah, but you really didn't hear any of that coming from David Moyes. You know, there was very few excuses about this performance, and he barely mentioned the fact they were 1-0 up at halftime.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just thinking about Arteta being 3 years. It's amazing, JJ, how close. I mean, that guy was close, it felt like, a couple times to losing his job. But he made it to the three-year mark, so props to him.
Definitely, and maybe it shows there's some value in persistence. But where were they going to go next? Honestly, like,
who knows? I don't know that always stops a team from making a managerial move.
It doesn't, but I'm glad Edu and the guys running it kind of saw something in it, and were willing to do what, like you said, lots and lots of clubs don't do, and persevere.
Let's go to the other North London club right now. JJ is Tottenham. They were in Brentford on Boxing Day, 2-2. If this was not the ultimate carbon copy of every match Tottenham has played so far this season, then I don't know what is. I don't know what their problem is. I don't know why it needs to be this way. Like, if you didn't watch the game today and I said, it finished 2-2, Tottenham and Brentford, I think everyone listening to this podcast would say, oh, Brentford probably took a two-goal lead and Tottenham probably stormed back in the second half to tie it and then fought hard for a third but couldn't get it. I mean, it's every week. It's like I've said a million times, it's like the World Cup never happened. It was all just a dream and we're right back into it. I've seen this game 14 other times this season.
Can I borrow heavily from BBC Match of the Day, Andrew, and a graphic that they put up, which, you know,
please,
really encapsulates that? So it was titled Two Sides of Tottenham. So today versus Brentford, first 60 minutes, they had 6 shots. In the last 30 minutes, they had 10. In the first 60 minutes, they had 3 shots on target. In the last 30 minutes, they had 5. Their expected goals went from, in the first hour, 0.24 to 1.01 in the last 30 minutes. And their possession went from 59% to 65%. I think the expected goals is the real one right there. And the uptick in shots, too. Nobody was able to give, Alan Shearer and Dion Dublin were on the panel, and I was really curious to see what they would give for the reasons for this Jekyll and Hyde kind of team within games. They didn't really give anything. It's
because it's unexplainable.
It's infuriating. And this is the part of the season where I know Miguel Delaney had this kind of theory. And he even admitted it wasn't based on a whole lot, but that Conte was managing this team, you know, managing them because he knew after the World Cup there'd be a run down the straight and that they needed to go. That flew out the window today in Brentford. Yeah, and I don't even know how you do that within a game. Hey,
no,
guys.
Right. Like,
hey, guys. But
don't play hard for 60 minutes, then play the hardest you've ever played. Like,
but
I understand that there's a rhythm to a game that you'll press for a little bit. You can't play that way an entire match or your guys will die on the field. Like, you can't give that much energy for 90 minutes. So I understand the way that stuff works. But this consistency with which they start first half so poorly.
But there's,
I don't think it's that they don't try hard. Like, no. It's not that kind of team that's complacent. It's not like that. I'm done trying to come up with explanations. I don't know how you explain it. It's very strange, but it's clearly baked. If we could go 6 weeks without them playing, come right back into it, and they do the same exact thing again, like, it's baked into the DNA of this club right now. I don't know how you break out of it. It's incredibly weird.
Yeah, Brentford were the better team overall, and, you know, in a way, it's kind of a really good result for Spurs, I think, to come away with.
Well, yes and no. I mean, look, they want a battle for a Champions League place. Liverpool are going to be hot on their heels. Manchester United are hot on their heels. So, you know, with Newcastle's injection into the top four, like, it's going to be hard for them. So a 2-2 draw, I don't care if it's on the road at Brentford. That's for a team like Tottenham, that's not good enough. That's not a good
result.
It's a good result because they were down 2 goals.
Correct.
In that way, sure. But you could look at it. Look, Tottenham, they went down 2. And then in the blink of an eye, within 6 minutes, the 65th and 71st, they tie it. That's now, they got 20-plus minutes to go on and win the thing. With all the momentum, with Brentford, you think, starting to tire. And they had their chances. I mean, they had some great chances near the end of this game. You know, who was it? Son hit, or Harry Kane hit the crossbar. They had a great chance near the end of stoppage time in the 95th. I mean, they had multiple chances. So, and once they scored that tying goal in the 71st, you think, okay, go on and win it now. Like, a draw is not enough. And they couldn't do it. So I don't know. I see what you're saying. When you're down 2 goals in a game and you get a point out of it, yes, that's something. But there are not many ways in which I can look at this in a positive light. Some of the things you see, like, you know, I wonder how much the Bentancur injury while he was on World Cup duty. I don't think it's a serious one. I have to double check and see what the prognosis of when he'll be back is. But I mean, there's a drop off there. There just is from him to Bissouma. I know that was a big signing for Tottenham over the summer, but Bentancur has been, you can make a case he's been their best player so far this year. That hurts them, him not being there. You know, then you look at things like, look, I through all the his position changes, will he go to Man United? Will he not? I know you've had your stance on Eric Dier for quite some time. You kind of have the whole, like, what exactly is he good at stance. And there are times when I get that. But overall, I've supported that guy. I think he changed positions and he's become a really, you know, he didn't start, but he's made himself into a national team player for England at center back. That's not his true position. That's admirable to me. But that second goal, I mean, when he mishits that ball and it goes out for a corner, you're just praying. You're just saying, don't let them score here. It's not fair to that poor guy if they score here. And they do. And it's just like, God almighty, like the ways in which this team sometimes burns themselves, it's maddening. So I don't know. I don't know how, if I'm looking at second half of the season storylines, like that's it for them. Is just, you know, I guess two things. At what point will they snap out of this first half malaise that they cannot seem to snap out of? It can't be like this the whole season. It just can't, right? Like, at some point, something's going to have to change. I don't know what, but so when will they snap out of that? And then the other one that's interesting to me is Son. You know, because last season, he was spectacular. Co-Golden Boot winner with Salah. A huge reason Tottenham was able to qualify for top four. And this season, he has not been that. And I'm just wondering, okay, well, if at a certain point he clicks back into being the Heung-min Son that we know and that we've seen in the last few seasons, well, then, okay, maybe this team switches back on and rises up the table once again. But, you know, at a certain point, I don't know, like they have, we'll see when Richarlison is back as well, but they have options up now, up front now. You know what I think of Kulusevski. He's got to play. If he's healthy, he's got to play. Had another assist today. I mean, he's either a goal or assist every week, it feels like. He's got to be in there. If Son's not performing, you know Kane's not going anywhere. It's not going to be Richarlison or Kulusevski. If Son doesn't perform, you know, I know he's done great things for the club, but they have options. So I'll be interested to see that. I love the guy. He's one of my all-time favorite players, unquestionably. But if the performances aren't there, then Conte's going to be forced into making some difficult decisions. So we'll see. We'll see.
We can't leave this game without just briefly mentioning the two worst dives that the league has seen so far. So Doherty's dive was one of those where Spurs are chasing the game and you're like, what are you doing? Just, you know, play that ball back out or try and turn. But, like, why are you diving there?
Yeah.
And then even more outrageous, like, several degrees worse was in Mbeumo's dive where he literally flung his 2 feet into Fraser Forster to try and make it look like a penalty. Like, sickening stuff. And Forster played that so well.
Yeah, he did. And you can, with stuff like that, you can usually tell by the player's reaction who did it. Like, if he throws his arms up in the air and goes crazy, then chances are I think he's got a case. But when Mbeumo has no appeal whatsoever to the referee, you kind of know, oh, well, something's clearly up here. Then you see the replays, and it's like, oh, my, this is...
Yeah, I mean, it was... There's initiating the contact. There's what Vardy used to do. And then there's this. This is a whole nother level. Like, Vardy, what was the term? Invited the contact. Hey, contact, come over here. This was like...
There's a little bit of an art form to being able to do that without it being a dive.
This was not it.
No, this was not. There was nothing artistic about that. But look, this is... We can bemoan certain elements of VAR, certainly, but this is where it works. Like, because there are referees who will be fooled by that. But in a VAR reality, you won't be. That'll never work again. And that's a good thing. But yeah, ultimately, I guess it's a good result. Is it a good result for Brentford, JJ? They're up 2 goals. They don't win, but it is Tottenham.
I don't know. I mean,
I don't know either.
Thomas Frank at the end of the game was like, he did the full football was the winner kind of thing. He was like, what a great game to welcome back the Premier League. Like, he was some hype man.
It's like Conte Frank is the new Pep Klopp. just, you know their buddiness after their games.
Right.
Oh, look at what we're doing. We're so good for the sport. Everyone wants to be
us. Oh, the smelling of the farts. Yeah, definitely.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, the inhaling of the fart. Yeah. No, Frank was just enthused. Yeah, he didn't seem upset. And I guess it's fine. Brentford are sit comfortably in 10th. It's okay.
Suppose you're right. It's okay. We'll settle on that. JJ, let's go to Villa Park. Another interesting one. Aston Villa and Liverpool 3-1. Liverpool victorious to begin their second portion of the season. A fun game. Were you able to take this one in with your dad?
Yeah, went to the bar. I watched it with my dad. Nice. Few pints. Very nice. Very, very nice. In fact, most people at that bar seem to be coming in the last 20 minutes of the game. There was a big rugby match and Munster were playing Leinster in the Celtic League. So I think that game, because this is hurling, soccer, football, rugby country. There's a whole mix of sports going on down here. But yeah, got to watch it. it was a really open game. And look, I think Liverpool deserved to win it, but Villa had their chances and did not take them. Leon Bailey springs to mind. Ollie Watkins springs to mind, although he did score a good header. It was a fun game. And the agent of chaos was to the fore.
So can we talk about this? Let's stop for a moment.
Okay.
This is now, like, sometimes in this sport, in any sport, you can see a thing developing right before your eyes. Like something that just sort of takes a hold of the public consciousness and becomes a focal point each and every game. It can be a player oftentimes. Darwin Nunez, he's become a thing now. Like if you just, during that game, if you typed his name into Twitter, a billion tweets came up.
You're crazy.
And it's just like the you know, like Giassi Zardes' first touch, it became a thing among U.S. soccer fans. Darwin Nunez's finishing ability, it's a thing now among Premier League fans. It just is.
I mean,
what do you call it? You call him the agent of chaos? I think it's great. He is that. He's involved in so much, which is great.
It's so long since we did a Premier League pod that you don't remember that you came up with the agent of chaos.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm very smart.
You are. Tonight there was, I mean, from the get-go, in the lead-up to the first goal, the corner that yielded the first goal eventually, I mean, Alisson plays this 25-yard absolute on a rope pass to Robertson. He's in behind. He centers. Now, initially, I thought Nunez was too far past the near post and that he did the right thing in stepping over it. Maybe he could have had a shot. I'm not going to crush him for that one because Salah started a darting run and then kind of stopped. And if he kept going, he definitely would have scored. But yeah, that was like, okay, he's already doing his thing. And he had a couple of chances. One ball that was sliced by the Villa defender up into the air and he's running in and the ball, like Robin Olsen, isn't coming out and the ball's just hanging there. And you think, all right, you have time to control this. And he goes to smash it on the volley and it like dribbles down his shin. Like he shins it straight at Robin Olsen. You're like, ah. And then in the second half, Salah plays this brilliant ball into him. And I'm like, I don't know what's going to happen here. And what happens is there's this delicious first touch, like so good. And he takes off. He absolutely streaks away because he's super quick. And he's one-on-one with the goalkeeper. And you think, go on, drags it wide. Now, Football 365 had a good piece on him, like the trouble he causes defenders, like the way he's always seems to be involved when the attack is going well. And they just said, like, he could have finished this game. He let, like, Nunez, not him on his own, but he did leave Liverpool with some missed chances in a game that they should have been way out of sight in.
I believe that the tally was he missed four, not just four chances, four big chances, I think, is the official statistic. I'm not.
I mean, that's absolutely right. But I mean,
can't have that.
No, for a guy,
and I know it's not always fair to compare a player to his price tag. He didn't decide to cost that much. It's not necessarily his fault, but like missing four big chances for a player of that value playing that position is kind of unacceptable. Like he, The reason I always say, like, he's all things to all people is because, like, you can watch him and sort of see whatever you want in his performances. He's involved in so much. Like, that's what you want from your strikers and from your attack-minded players, to be involved in goal-scoring opportunities, because eventually those chances will fall. They will start to go his way, you would think, at some point. But until that happens, until he cleans up his ability to finish, it's hard to watch when he gets the ball in goal-scoring chances.
The goal that Bacicic scored, the 18-year-old that came off the bench, the third goal. Mm-hmm. Can a touch be both good and bad at once? You know, you're saying all things to all men. The ball's whipped over the top to Nunez, and he takes a touch, and I think, is that a good touch? I don't know if it is. And it seems like it's going to run out over the line. But no, he keeps it in, cuts it back, and in the end, Bacicic gets across and sticks it in the net. And I'm like, has he done a good thing there? Yes. Was the touch that good? I don't know.
He took the scenic route, but
I mean,
but he got there in the end.
Yeah, and like, look, people will know on this podcast that I'm just like so unsure of myself, and I don't really want to wade in, because you just get like you just get destroyed by the pro Nunez camp. I mean,
you've never, that's never been a deterrent for you. You're never shying away from an argument.
I usually don't, but Keith Costigan, the commentator on Fox, who's a really nice guy, good guy. I suggested that Nunez was terrible in his cameo in the 1-0 win against Man City a few months back, and he just crushed me. Like, I mean, the cordiality between us on Twitter was gone.
Oh, wow.
Absolutely.
Change the dynamic of your relationship is what you're saying.
Yeah. I know this conversation is steaming towards some hot transfer news, so I just want to say before we do, the opening goal is just a sensual goal, a beautiful goal. Trent Alexander-Arnold, the ball's cleared. He finds himself in a central midfield position. And with the outside of his right boot, just like a Juan Sebastian Varane-esque pass, finds Andy Robertson, who's now playing right back. Like, he's on the wrong side. And he delivers the cross straight to Salah, and it's in the back of the net. And you're like, when you see that, you're like, oh, Liverpool are good. But conversely, Aston Villa still found ways to get at Liverpool, and a better team would have given Liverpool much more trouble tonight than Villa did. That's all I'd say. And now we enter a transfer has overshadowed the game portion of the podcast.
This is stunning. I found this absolutely stunning for a couple reasons. One, Cody Gakpo, I was kind of under the assumption that this was Manchester United's player to lose.
Done deal, I thought.
They lost him. The second thing that I found stunning about it, which we can talk about, I don't know, normally JJ, when you get a young player, like Cody Gakpo's price tag before the World Cup was enormous, at least I thought it was. Then the World Cup happened, and he more than fulfilled the hype that had surrounded him, which oftentimes will inflate a price tag, fairly or unfairly. We can make that determination on each of us on our own, but that's what happens at these major tournaments. And so a price tag that I thought was already enormous, that was going to be inflated off of a great World Cup, I thought, okay, well, add X million to it. He goes for 37 million, which is, I mean, in this day and age, that's a steal for one of the great young players in Europe, unquestionably.
There will be add-ons.
I'm sure there will, but in the meantime, I don't know, I haven't seen what the add-ons are, but at the most, what does that get up to, you
50.
Think? Like, all right, still more than reasonable for a young player like him, who plays an attack position, which is usually a more expensive position. Then the third part of this that's so stunning to me, okay, so, like, I guess I you know, United, I understand them going after him, even though they just recently got Antony. They also just lost Ronaldo, so I can see them wanting to bring in another attacking player. Liverpool, though, so let's go through this now, of what this looks like up front for them. Gakpo, Salah, Nunez, Jota, Diaz, Firmino. I know that there are some injuries there, but like, that's six guys. I know depth is good. Like, oftentimes we'll say, okay, like, this is a good problem. Okay, sure. Like, if someone gets hurt, yeah, you certainly have bodies to fill it with minimal drop-off. But there's going to be moments, JJ, where maybe Klopp has the personality to do it. He's great at man management, I suppose, and his CV is such that you have to respect his decisions. But, like, yeah, it's a good problem to have, but there's going to be angry guys in that locker room. There just are. Like, every single one of those guys, with the possible exception of Firmino at this stage in his career, but every one of those guys is going to think, I'm good enough to be starting for this team right now. And Klopp's going to have to manage that, and that's going to be interesting. I mean, if I look at it right now, I say Salah, Nunez, and Gakpo are probably the preferred three. But we've seen Jota, when he's healthy, hit form where you can't not play him.
But he's got to be. He's not in the picture. He won't be for a long time.
Yeah. It wasn't a season ender though.
I mean, we, how do you know?
Well, I was, because I read. I'm well read. I was reading about the outlook for how long him and Luis Diaz are supposed to be out for. I mean, they're long-term injuries, but hang on, I'm pulling it up right now. Diaz expected back. Where is it? Here, you talk for a sec. Jota is expected to be out until late January, early February, is what I'm seeing at TalkSport. Luis Diaz expected to be out of action until March.
You see,
after he suffered a setback in his recovery.
Yep,
so
you see, that
these are guys who there's more games that they're going to miss, but they're not season enders.
Well, I think there's a couple of things to factor in. The first thing to factor in is that Liverpool are pretty tight to their chest about timelines and when players come back. We've seen that with Chamberlain regularly, and we've seen it with Virgil van Dijk as well. So they don't like to really let the media know the extent of the timeline for injuries and when players can be expected back. That's the first thing.
We were lied to, is what you're saying.
No. They'll just tell you what they want to tell you. So we don't know. We really don't know. And we don't know if there have been setbacks or if the extent of the injuries is worse than the medical team initially thought.
Liars.
I'm surprised by this move. I really am. And that's not to say he's not a quality player, but to gazump Manchester United in this way is... Yeah, I can't believe it. I also think midfield is the area I really wanted to address. And now I'm not saying it won't be addressed in the summer with Bellingham, but I am kind of surprised by this. And the other element that's been brought up is that this spending on big name players, you know, Nunez and now Gakpo, is not really Liverpool. Not really. And is this anything to do with the gutting of the stats department? I'm not saying they don't have stats guys, but Michael Edwards is gone and Ward is gone. And we know those two guys were integral to what's happened in the last 5-6 years. This was an interesting one from Mike L. Goodman. Whether or not he works out, Gakpo is not a guy that traditional analytics particularly ranks highly.
Hmm.
So if you go, a lot of the stats guys are why? And
that is interesting because the stats of goals and assists, he does very well in.
Right. And so far that's been in the Eredivisie. So we know that doesn't always translate to the highest level. So that will be one caveat. But you can list the exciting things that he does from the left-hand side.
He's just a Dutch Josie Altidore.
No. His ability to take shots, his ability to put in quality crosses. There's a lot of things, strings to his bow. But it's such an obvious signing. You know, I didn't expect Liverpool to do it, but it's a guy who's been talked about around Europe, a number of clubs, with Manchester United leading the pack, or at least we thought so. And now that Liverpool just come in out of nowhere and take him, it's a very interesting signing.
Just off of extending Salah too and making him one of the top five highest paid players in the Premier League, they're throwing, I mean, they're moving money around right now, which is interesting because they're also supposedly a club for sale.
They're also a club that needs to be in the Champions League next season. So I wonder how much their bad start to the season is driving this kind of this recruitment.
And I'll tell you too, I mean, I had kind of forgotten about it a little bit, but you just mentioned Bellingham a moment ago and this the kind of foregone conclusion that he'll be there next season. I mean, what a thing for that. I mean, the regeneration of Liverpool, if they come out, you know, if within a 5-month window signing the two arguably best young players in Europe, in Gakpo and Bellingham. I mean,
let's not go patting ourselves in the back for Bellingham just yet, though.
That's fair, but I'm just the arrows are pointing in that direction. Just interesting, but I don't know. I saw that news today and I was really stunned. I had to reread it. Like I had to make sure I wasn't misreading Liverpool United, that it was a mistake, because I don't know, just I guess like you, I thought if there was an area to improve, it would be midfield, especially after the money they just spent to re-sign Salah and buy Nunez. I was trying to take some sort of meaning away from it. Okay, who is it that Klopp doesn't trust? Does he not trust Jota to remain healthy? Is there a player among those six guys I mentioned that maybe he thinks can be converted into more of a midfielder? I don't know. I'm trying to read into it somehow, but maybe it's just is what it is. They just want to have as many great players as they can in goal scoring positions. So it might just be that simple, but pretty stunning.
Speaking of which, Andrew, most assists Premier League defenders with tonight's action. Andrew Robertson is now on 54. He leads the pack in the Premier League era. Can you guess who second is?
Defenders, assists. Okay, so probably a fullback.
Yes. All fullbacks, Andrew.
They're all, yeah. Can you give me a hint? Are they still playing?
No.
Okay. Fullback.
Always seemed like he was going to go to Manchester United, but never did.
That's an interesting hint. You got any others?
So Andrew Robertson's on 54. Number two is 53. I'll just say who it is. It's Leighton Baines.
What nationality?
Oh, it's English.
English?
I nearly said it there.
I talked over it, so I didn't hear. English, fullback, assists. No longer playing.
Wasn't even a regular for England.
Ashley Cole?
No, Ashley Cole was most definitely a regular for England.
Yeah, he was a regular. Wasn't a regular for England. Help me out.
Played on the blue side of Liverpool.
Leighton Baines?
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
I probably thank you for that hint. I don't know that I would have gotten to that.
Yeah, number three is Trent Alexander-Arnold on 45.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just goes to show you the period of dominance those two fullbacks have had. And the fourth one, number four, on 44 assists, would never have got this if you'd asked me. So I don't think you will either.
Any hint?
Currently on NBC as a co-commentator.
Lee Dixon?
No, ex-Chelsea.
Graham Lasso?
Mm. But if you factor in his Blackburn period plus his Chelsea period, kind of makes sense.
How about that?
How about that?
Interesting. A little JJ trivia.
Yeah, I didn't have the music because it's late here.
There's a noise ordinance in effect. There's no music after 3 a.m.
Yeah, no trumpets.
Don't even think about it. Let's see, a couple other things to wrap up with, JJ. You mentioned Everton. Quickly, I just want to say, those poor Everton fans that just, like, they love this club, and they're just being put through it. That was, like, to come out of the World Cup break, you think, okay, like, here we go. Like, Wolves have been awful. Like, maybe we can a new beginning. Like, let's go. And it's just like, it was just the most Everton of Everton performances. And they lose right at the death. Traore plays in a ball. Podence, I'm trying to remember now. Am I confusing the goals? He scored the first. Aitnori scored the win.
Yeah. Podence is stoppage time. The equalizer for Wolves is really good.
Yeah. But it's not to be for Everton as they lose to begin this portion of the season, and Wolves in enormous need of victories, of being able to string some wins together. They go and they get a tough one. I guess they're all going to be tough right now for where they are on the table, but they needed it, and Lopetegui's reign at Wolverhampton Wanderers begins on the right foot.
Yeah, I mean, it's worrying times for Everton. They're, 2 points off the drop, Andrew? They just don't look like they'll beat. Like, who are they going to beat? Who's going to score the goals? They're 1 point off Wolves with 16 games played. They are only 2 points off Southampton, who are rock bottom, and they're only a point ahead of Nottingham Forest in 19th. Like, it's tight down there.
This is who they are. I mean, in this era that we're currently in for Everton, like, they are a relegation candidate. Every year is going to be a battle for them. That's the space this club occupies right now.
I know, but now the goodwill is all ebbed away from the summer. It's all gone. And you hear the boos ringing out. I don't know what they do. I mean, you could argue if Anthony Gordon takes his chance, it's a really, really good save. He was played in. It was the second half. And, I mean, he should have slotted at home. No, it was the first half, actually. And that would have made such a difference. And it's not like there wasn't a huge difference, like, in the XGs between the two teams. Just, like, Wolves just sucker punched them right at the end. Andrew, if we're doing our you fear for them table, I'm really fearing for Frank Lampard right now.
Agreed. Totally agree. For his job, you mean?
Just general fear. Just for the whole situation. It's a situation of fear, Andrew. I mean, they are relegation fodder written all over them.
Now, fortunately for them, they're one of many. There are several clubs that look very capable of going down this year. And it could be another one, much like last season, it could be another one of these. Just be the least bad.
God,
it
Andrew.
Can just be that.
God, Andrew, Southampton stank today in their South Coast Derby defeat to Brighton. They were rank. And again, I've got to take my lumps. I was campaigning for Gavin Bazunu to be number one at a Premier League team. And he didn't look good on the first goal today. I know he's a young keeper, but like, young keeper, terrible defence. A manager whose name I don't know. I mean, we are ticking some boxes here for Southampton to finally end their most recent stay in the top flight.
I mean, they've been teetering. they were one of my predicted three earlier this season to go down. So I would worry about them. Just looking at it, them playing Brighton, a nation's new obsession with Alexis McAllister. Just generally curious. So this was something also that Eric Ten Hag spoke about regarding Lisandro Martinez. Ten Hag was kind of the to hear him was funny. He was like, "Yeah, this is a great thing that he achieved for his country. It's an unbelievable achievement. We're very proud." But also, the Premier League begins on the 27th. So, like, he was kind of like, okay, get it out of your system because, like, the job's not done. I was thinking about that. McAllister, Martinez, Christian Romero. When is the appropriate time where we should say, all right, guys, like, enough. Like, let's get back to work here.
I mean, is there any danger? I mean, I guess Unai Emery did talk to the media and suggest that he'll have a little word with Martinez about some of his celebrations, which have veered into the...
Patrick Vieira didn't mince any words about what he thought of them.
What did he say?
I mean,
pull it up there because, okay, so just to fill people
disgusting.
In.
Disgusting. I mean, he had strong language. I'll find it for you.
Okay, well, I want to differentiate between what Martinez has done and then what Argentinian fans have taken way too far, burning effigies of Mbappe, just a general fairly sinister undertones to those celebrations, regardless of what Mbappe said about the structures of South American football versus the competitive nature of international football in Europe, regardless of what advantages he thinks European players have playing in these structures prior to the tournament, those words should not be the reason for some of the unsavory sights we've seen. I think Martinez really, so Emi Martinez in his celebrations, immediately after the game, he hugged and embraced Mbappe. And
yeah.
And then kind of just proceeded to enter in a few days worth of trolling. He in the dressing room when they were dancing, he did this, let's have a minute silence for Mbappe, which, okay, all right, that became part of the song. And then he had a baby on the open top bus with Mbappe's face on it. Now, I don't know whether the crowd threw that to him or not, but, you know, there was just he just lost the run of himself. And, you know, young guys, young guys drink celebrations. It happens. But Emi Martinez strikes me as a guy you meet on holiday, right? And you think he's tremendous fun the first night you meet him. And then you swap numbers, say, yeah, let's hang out again. And then every other night after that, it's the same thing. And it gets so old. And by the end of the vacation, you're like, I never want to speak to this guy again.
Yeah, it's interesting. They were a sentimental favorite, primarily for Leo Messi reasons. Then they went and did it and won it. And then the dust kind of settled, and we've been able to all watch this unfold. And in the end, it's kind of like, they're a little tough to root for at times. I'm glad for Messi. Like, you know, his persona, with the exception of the Weghorst LVG stuff, which I actually didn't necessarily mind just for the general heat and intensity of that game as a whole. He's the public face of Argentina, but like, he's not an accurate public face of Argentina. Like his stoicism, kind of the way he carries himself is a little bit different. But like, back to the original question. Well, actually, no, before we get back to that, JJ, I was a little harsher with the words I thought Vieira used than what he actually said, but okay. He was asked about Emi Martinez. He said, some of the pictures I saw from the Argentina goalkeeper, I think take away a little bit what Argentina achieved at the World Cup. I don't think they really needed that. You can't control sometimes people's emotional decisions, but that was a stupid decision, I think, for Martinez to do that. I was really disappointed. Vieira, of course, being French, so maybe there's a little bit more of a personal connection to his feelings on it as opposed to maybe a neutral fan. But I think a lot of neutral fans out there feel much the same way about some of Emi Martinez's antics. And some people will say we need to stop yelling at clouds.
Yep, true.
Let a guy have fun.
Yeah, I guess. I think he should probably... Yeah, I think he used his Golden Glove Award as a phallic symbol.
Sure did.
And I think once he'd done that, I think someone should have had a word. Listen, enjoy yourself. But just remember, in this day and age, all of this is forever. Okay? It's not going anywhere. The internet is like Pepperidge Farms. It remembers. Pepperidge Farm remembers. Remembers when you used your Golden Glove Award like a penis?
But as for when these guys, when it's appropriate for them to return, I was thinking about it. Like Christian Romero, for example. So he didn't play, I think, for like a month and a half for Tottenham leading up to the World Cup break. Then he played every second of the World Cup. And now he's not playing again for Tottenham. And like at a certain point, you have to start to scratch your head and be like, dude, okay, like good for you, happy for you, but also like priorities. This is the club that pays you.
Andrew, if you drank as much Fernet con Cola as I fear many of these Argentinians did, you wouldn't be fit to move either. So I'm handing them a pass.
I'll give them January 1st. Like, enjoy yourselves, but when that calendar turns over, it's time, guys. Okay? Like, you'll have these memories forever. This is great. But, like, we got to get back to work, all right? So I'll give them the rest of the week. I think that's more than fair.
Okay.
That's like a two-week binge that I'm allowing them. But then it's back to work. One other one, JJ. Actually, two other ones. Quickly, I don't have much on the game. I just want to say Tim Ream scored his first Premier League goal today.
What a great goal.
I mean, he hit... Did you see a... I'd like to see a clock on how fast that ball was hit. I mean, he smashed the F out of that thing into the net. That had to be going at least 70 miles an hour.
It was such a sharp turn. It was wonderful. And he buried it from close range. He roofed it. Yeah, great for him. And Fulham looked really good again. And Palace looked like they still were on extended break.
Yeah. Yeah, not good for them. Another one of these teams that maybe kind of sort of could be one of those many relegation candidates that we're talking about, Palace. But for Fulham, eighth, up to eighth in the table. Positive goal differential after today, 22 points ahead of Chelsea, who are in ninth currently. Two games at hand, but still, just like, this is spectacular stuff. I was wondering too, with Ream getting that first Premier League goal, the U.S. Soccer Player of the Year nominees. I'm just wondering, like, so Ream he's in there now. I believe it's for the men, Adams, Pulisic, Anthony Robinson, Matt Turner, and Tim Ream. I can't help but wonder for how important he was for Fulham to get back into the Premier League. For now, the job he's done since Fulham have returned to the Premier League, scored a goal today before the end of the year, played his way back into Berhalter's plans for a World Cup, then played every minute at the World Cup and played really well. I mean, look, Adams is going to be hard to beat because of the emerging as the U.S. captain and playing really well at club level for Leeds. You know, I don't think it can be Pulisic because no. I just don't think he's played enough at the club level this year. Matt Turner, kind of the same as a backup at Arsenal. I'll tell you what, man, in the end, I think it's probably going to be, I guess Anthony Robinson's got a shot. You know, I've always talked about how important he is, but I don't know. It's probably going to be Adams. If I had a vote, though, which I should, I think it's an abomination that I don't. Man, I would stare at the paper for a while, considering Ream. I really would. I can't help it.
That is the weakest strong point you've ever made. I'll tell you, if I had a vote, I would think hard about that vote.
Think of what you. How did you view Tim Ream a year ago at this time? He was a total afterthought. He has played his way into deep consideration for being the U.S. Soccer Men's Player of the Year.
I would give it to
him. That's incredible.
I would give it to him immediately. I wouldn't. I totally agree with you.
From the guy who a month ago said Tyler Adams is the best player on the U.S.
Yeah, and he is. But that's not what this is for. This is for Player of the Year. It's not for best.
Well, a lot of what Adams did happened in the last year.
Look, I can't do this conversation. I really can't do this conversation.
4 a.m. now, by the way, in case you were keeping track.
Yeah, 4 a.m. I'd happily give it to him. Happily. I think he deserves it. And for all the reasons you outlined, he's been brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, I love it. You know what? He got my vote. He got my vote. I'd vote Ream.
The vote that U.S. Soccer won't give you.
No.
All right.
They got no use for my opinions. That won't stop me from having them. Finally, JJ, Newcastle. They're up to second now on the table. I want to read first this tweet and then another one. But first this tweet from Rob Usri, who's a good follow on Twitter for a lot of things, Atlanta United FC and U.S. Soccer. But he said, Joseph and Miggy together was something way more special than we really knew at the time. We were unbelievably lucky to get to experience it. Joseph Martinez and Miguel Almiron playing together in MLS. So he's both right and wrong. Like, he's right. I think that combo will be looked upon as one of the all-time great MLS combos with those two players. But I think he's wrong a little bit because I do think that in real time we understood how great that was. I guess maybe not to the extent that Almiron would go on and do with the things he's doing right now in the Premier League. But, I mean, like, they were an all-time great duo when they were playing together at their peak.
They were, but I think the latter years of Joseph Martinez and the recent years of Almiron, you know, that has kind of shaded things a little bit. But the recent form, unbelievable. And the goal today was so good. It's so good. Now, granted, Leicester were poor and they didn't get a shot. I think a shot on target until like the 82nd minute. But that Almiron goal, I'm talking about goals of the season with Salah. That's right up there. The brilliant 1-2 with Guimaraes runs through. Just such a good finish.
If the Premier League handed out a most improved player award, I mean, is it unanimous, Miguel Almiron?
Yeah, it is.
Right?
It's such an insulting award, though. It's just, hey, you were kind of rubbish, but now you're great. I also think that, like, Eddie Howe being there, better players being brought to the club, and a general correct usage of Almiron, like, it can't have been good for a player like him under Steve Bruce. It just can't.
That was the other tweet I wanted to read.
Go on.
It came from a Twitter account called @COSoccerPod.
Mm-hmm.
They tweeted, repeat after me, what a job Eddie Howe is doing. I can tell you it was J.J. Devaney at the keyboard when those words were written. And you have been slow, I would say. This is not an indictment, but you have been a little bit slow, I think, in giving Howe credit, partially because of the way you view what Newcastle are now.
Mm.
I think you just don't like them.
No, Andrew, so, like, that is just, I mean,
the truth.
No. You don't get to do that. Make up stuff. Nothing against Newcastle per se. The organization of the club and the way it's now owned by the state of Saudi Arabia is very problematic. It's come on.
Yeah, I'm not saying you're wrong.
I don't like them.
You don't like them.
So
it's
childish.
Okay. You're one of. I'm sorry.
Christ, if you're going to keep me up at 4 a.m. for this, like, I will literally walk out. I will walk out on you right now. I mean that.
Don't you come on now. That wouldn't be in the spirit of Christmas. What if another object falls from the ceiling and crushes me? Who's going to call the police to tell them I'm in danger?
Well, will you allow me to clarify the tweet? First of all, it was half in jest and half serious. So the you know, we have all these football and cliches and phrases, and one of them is, what a job, insert manager's name, is doing at a club. And it's usually like some old football guy on Soccer Saturday saying, you know, what a job Eddie Howe is doing. And I'd counted up the how many what a jobs Eddie Howe is doing since I've landed. I'm up to 4. So a journalist on Twitter, 2 different people on Sky Sports, and Alan Shearer tonight on BBC. What a job Eddie Howe is doing. That's the joke part. The second part is, I actually think he is doing a good job. Albeit with 200 odd million spent, but
Hold on.
No,
see, now
no,
this is where I need to stop you.
Here's where we go into why. Well, the key players have been Almiron. He wasn't bought then. A key player has been Raul Linton.
Look at the lineup that they started to. Look at the lineup that they started today. JJ, mm-hmm. Almiron, Joe Linton, Chris Wood, Sean Longstaff, Joe Willock, Bruno Guimaraes, Kieran Trippier, Dan Byrne, Fabian Schär, Sven Botman, Nick Pope.
Right.
Okay, so a couple of those players were expensive. But this team, to be doing what they're doing right now, I mean, they are way overperforming the talent on that roster.
Andrew,
they are. They just are.
Andrew, they have one of the Europe's top-performing fullbacks, Kieran Trippier.
Uh-huh.
Right? They have brought in Sven Botman, the centre-back, who's been excellent for them. They beat to the punch some of the top clubs in Europe for Bruno Guimaraes. He's
JJ, put that 11 against the 11s of Liverpool, Chelsea, United, Spurs, I mean, City. Like, they're overperforming right now all those teams.
Okay,
and
okay.
I don't care how expensive some of these guys are. They're not, talent for talent, they're not close to those teams.
Okay,
they're not.
Okay, cool. Fine. It can be both things, and it is both things. It's money, and it's Eddie Howe.
Sure. Yeah, look, it doesn't happen by accident. I understand they had to spend to get some of these guys, but, like, not to the extent that other clubs have.
They spent 200 million since they've been bought out. Like, over 200 million. Well over 200 million. Like, what are we talking about here? And they've taken one of football's foremost, we'll say, sporting directors from Brighton in Dan Ashworth. Like, and it's happened because they've been bought by the PIF of Saudi Arabia. Like,
that 11 is not a second place 11. They are way outperforming the talent of the players at their disposal. And that is a tip of the hat to the manager who's getting the most out of them, and to these players who are like Joe Ellington he's completely revived his career. Almiron has revived his career. Dan Byrne has become a star in this league. You know, like it's incredible what's going on there. And it's probably only going to take off from here for the reasons that you're suggesting, that they have now had this cash infusion injected into them and they're going to kick on and they're going to spend a lot.
I mean, what do you mean they're going to? They're second in the table tonight. A year ago, Andrew, they were second from bottom.
Incredible.
Yeah. Now, you know, like it's so much easier and it's such a nicer conversation, much more festive. You know, to talk about what a job Eddie Howe is doing, and that's why most people are doing it. But you know, it's not just that; it's two things.
Chris Wood started at center forward tonight.
Mm, he did.
Second place team.
All right.
Incredible.
Okay.
Incredible. Anything else?
No. I honestly think there's so much football coming up now. We'll probably do another podcast this week on Thursday. So what a job Andrew Gundling is doing. That's what I want to finish on.
Except, by the way, I'll finish on this little bit of news that I just saw.
Oh,
actually, we mentioned Tim Ream, 35-year-old Ream today. After you talk about one of the all-time great days in a player's life. He's 35. You think his career is winding down. Only now, today, he scores his first goal in the Premier League, and he just also received an extension with the club through the 23-24 season. I mean, this guy, he's having one of the all-time years.
He certainly is. I know what he deserves.
I love it. I can't get enough of it. I think I need a Ream U.S. jersey.
I've only ever heard good things about him from his time at Red Bulls all the way through. And, you know, it's been a circuitous path. Starts in MLS, goes to the Premier League, gets relegated with Bolton, ends up then being, for most of his career, a kind of a championship player, on-off Premier League player. And then at the end, he's having this Indian summer. I wish we all could live like that.
Spectacular. Is there anything else that I can bring up to keep you awake longer?
Jesus Christ, you got to let me sleep. This is outrageous.
I'm sure there's some bits of MLS news that I could probably dig up if you don't laugh at that.
I would sail a boat all the way just to slap you in
the draft. We haven't had a pod since the draft.
I'm going to bury you under another television if you don't let me go.
This was hugely fun. I missed the World Cup so much, but this is still also amazing talking about the Premier League with you. I enjoy it so much. We'll be in touch during the week, JJ, of course. There's a lot of games still to happen over the next few days. So if we didn't get to your team specifically out there today, I'm talking to you, United fans, Chelsea fans, City fans. Don't worry. There's time for all of you guys, okay? We'll get to everyone. Hey, JJ, go get some sleep. For God's sake, what are you doing awake at this hour? Enough already. What are you trying to prove? You trying to impress us? God. Hey, this was fun, man. To you, I say,
what a job JJ Devaney is doing.
I'll see you.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.